Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
A little bit. No, it was David.
Was it David that liked Neek?
And we'll talk to him in a second. He was a little bit further down because of the age.
Yeah.
It was the age and coming into the league with, you know, I think he also had a problem with the Colorado State, like David Roddy.
Sure.
Colorado State tree. For the Grizzlies hadn't worked out all that well.
But, if Neek Clifford, for me, the archetype of guy that he wants to replicate is kind of a Josh Hart.
Yeah.
Should be a dirty work guy that can knock down a three.
Yep, for sure. All right, now let's go ahead and get David Cobb on the show to start up hour number two. That's next right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Let this Creed rejoin music be a reminder. Go to 92.9ESPN.com, enter our contest to win some Creed tickets coming up this Sunday at FedEx Forum. I'll be on hand. Connor will be on hand. It'll be a good time. But David Cobb joins right now, CBS Sports College Football and College Basketball on X, David W. Cobb. David, how's it going?
Hey, man. It's going well. How are you?
I am doing well. I did just try to call my son at the break, and he cried. He cried through the phone. So there was that. I guess that's how I'm doing. He didn't want to see my face on FaceTime. Sort of stressed him out, I guess.
That's rough, man. I'm sorry that happened to you. But you know what I typically find when the kid cries? It's just because they're hungry or they're tired. Typically, those
are the
two reasons.
Well, he had milk directly around his face, so I don't know if he was hungry. I don't know if he was hungry, but you know, it's just my face. It can scare folks every once in a while. Now, I since Monday in the news of Memphis's offer to the Big 12 for membership, $200 million, an out period in 2031 if the Big 12 didn't think they were adding value. We've been trying to find reasons as to why the Big 12 said no. Now, one of your colleagues over at CBS Sports, Shehan Jayaraja, had this to say on Sports 365. I want to play it, then I want to react to it. All right, so that was Shehan Jayaraja, one of your colleagues over at CBS Sports covering national college football. And the idea there is Memphis, as opposed to the Houstons, the SMUs maybe, the BYUs, the Cincinnatis, they're more reactive than proactive. I have to say, I think he's missing a little bit of context with the history of Memphis and the way the athletic department has funded maybe basketball more than football in the past. But I have to say, it feels like one of the most level-headed explanations that I've heard on the subject the entire week.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's like, wow, the Liberty Bowl used to be a crappy stadium is kind of a weak excuse because, I mean, they're renovating the Liberty Bowl now. Yeah, I mean, that is true. They are reactive in trying to peacock, right? They're saying, look at us.
Yeah.
Well, we're spending all this money. We're renovating our football stadium. It doesn't really feel like to me like Cincinnati had to do that. It feels like Cincinnati's inclusion was more about their football success than anything, making the college football playoff and really kind of dressing themselves up in that way. Because I'm going to tell you right now, like Nippert Stadium at Cincinnati is not state of the art. Yeah. I don't think they've been pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into
that
stadium.
I will say it's pretty cool stadium, though, to play in. I'll give them credit for that.
Yeah, right. So I don't know. I'm not discounting what Shehan said at all. I think he got a pretty good representation of what Big 12 leadership thought. And then explained it in that interview. At the end of the day, it feels like the Big 12 didn't want Memphis in the league. They just didn't
right.
care. Like they don't care. Like they don't want Memphis. Like, and there's not really any sensible, logical reason why. They don't want them. They don't want their money. They don't want they don't want that logo. They don't want, they just don't want them. They're really, because if you're trying to find a logical reason for it, I mean, there really isn't one. I mean, Memphis presented them with a solution to a revenue problem, and they said, no, thanks, we're not interested in that. And I mean, I just think that's kind of wild, like that they didn't want what Memphis was bringing to the table in terms of the corporate partnerships with AutoZone and FedEx and others. That to me is the part that I just can't quite wrap my mind around. I can wrap my mind around the Big 12 not wanting Memphis. I just can't wrap my mind around the Big 12 not wanting the money that Memphis was bringing. That to me is the one sticking point that I'm having a hard time getting past.
Yeah. Now, can I ask you this? We didn't cover this on Monday, but I want to ask you now. Who do you think sort of leaked this story? Gave it to Ross Dellinger and otherwise? Because I think that could tell a story in itself. Like, who do you think it was? We'll speculate for a second.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I think there would be some reason for Memphis to want it out there, because I think it shows, hey, look, this athletic department is serious. This university is serious. This university has a lot of resources at its disposal, a lot of Fortune 500 backing in its corner. And that's as time goes on, that will be one of the takeaways here. A year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years down the line, the next time another conference needs a new member, they're not going to necessarily think, oh, wow, how embarrassing was it that Memphis got rejected 5 years ago? They're going to say, huh, I wonder if Memphis could still bring something to the table, sort of like what it proposed to the Big 12 a few years back. You know, and so whether it was Memphis that leaked it or not, I think once you get past the 24-hour news cycle of, oh, wow, that's embarrassing, the longer-term takeaway is, oh, wow, yeah, Memphis is kind of serious about, you know, trying to get to the next level in college sports. So I don't know if it was Memphis or not, but if it was, I could understand it for those reasons, because I think once you get past the egg on your face momentary whatever, like there's some good to come from it.
Now, if I'm trying to spin it and make it positive on the University of Memphis, I don't necessarily think Memphis would want that embarrassment. I get what you're saying. I could also see this coming from the Big 12 office. And the reason I say that is because we have a guy in Brett Yormark who does everything to generate revenue, everything. And I think with this deal, you know, I would imagine they were going back and forth before we even knew about it, dating back months, right? And Brett Yormark probably had to talk them into concessions. And Brett Yormark maybe, help doctor this deal to a certain extent behind the scenes. And what do his members consistently gripe about? It's about revenue generation and trying to, you know, catch up with the SEC and the Big Ten, trying to, you know, move forward and make more money. Brett Yormark and the Big 12 office, it seems like they had a chance to do that, and maybe this was some level of pressure saying, well, we did what you guys wanted, you just didn't want the deal. That's something I would hope happened behind the scenes, maybe more than actually happened.
I think that's a really sensible take on the situation, Gabe, because as a commissioner, your job is to generate revenue. I mean, Brett Yormark has been so aggressive from the start, coming from a very non-traditional background. You got to remember, this is a guy who came from the entertainment industry to lead a power conference. He didn't come from the, oh, I'm a former university president, or I'm a former athletic director, and I'm obsessed with student athlete welfare.
Right.
And, you know, he didn't come from that background. He doesn't speak that language. He speaks the language of money. And for that reason, I got to think, like, he was probably totally fine with this working out. I don't think it was Brett Yormark sitting there saying, we can't have this. You know, he's looking at FedEx. You kidding me? AutoZone? Okay. A new media market there in Memphis, Tennessee? Yeah, absolutely. He's looking at those things and thinking, all right, I'm going to bring this to my members, right? Like, that's kind of got to be where the commissioner's head is at on all of that. And then the membership, obviously, for whatever reason, was just so forcefully against this in such just demonstrative terms. I think it's, you know, I think others have made this point, and I think it's probably true. There's a perception of Memphis, and this is where Shahan's point sort of proves true. The perception of Memphis is rooted in what Memphis was 10, 15 years ago. And
yep.
The reality is they've made a lot of strides since then. I mean, a lot of strides since then. As an athletic department, as a university, with the facilities, with the investment in everything from a indoor football training facility to, just what they're doing with the Liberty Bowl, the tennis facility, some of the sort of behind the scenes stuff and whatever. And, you know, for whatever reason, I don't think the Big 12 presidents and athletic directors were really too excited about, you know, exploring that and really getting a full sense for kind of how competitive Memphis wants to be.
And for God's sakes, they turned themselves into a research institution to try to make these strides. I mean, they've done a lot. That's why I do think, while I think what Shahan said was relatively level-headed, and I don't think fully incorrect. I also don't think it's fully correct. I think it just does lack the context of, you know, what Memphis fans know about the way things were ran in the 90s, in the early 2000s, R.C. Johnson and the full investment into basketball, making basketball king. That set back the athletic department pretty drastically, which is why, you know, it happens every time this Memphis program either denies the Pac-12 or gets denied by the Big 12. We always arrive back at the let's make basketball king. That's your mm-hmm. ticket. I don't know why certain fans in this particular city can't get over that. Can't learn from the history and the mistakes of the past that have led us to this point. It seems like that timing of the late 90s, early 2000s, the R.C. Johnson era, it feels like that's a big reason, if not the only reason, that we're in this mess. You wish you could go back and change time. You obviously can't do that, but it's strange to me that there's still Memphis fans that call for that particular set of circumstances to roll back out.
Well, it's kind of like, look how far that got you, right? Because, I mean, if you'd really gone all in on basketball, maybe you could have gotten to the Big East for basketball. Maybe Memphis football would be floating out there as an independent like UConn is right now. And, you know, the Fuente era and the Norvell era and the Silverfield era never would have happened. They'd be going 3-9 playing against, you know, UMass and some Conference USA teams every season. And basketball would be out here in the Big East, you know, doing its thing, right? That never came to fruition, and now it's like, oh man, like we're really good at football. We gotta respect that. So I just, you know, I don't understand kind of why you'd want to deviate from that now. But I mean, look, there is a scenario here that we've discussed, and you know, it's potentially back in play. But you go to the Big East for basketball and other sports. You go to the Pac-12 for football. Then both of your premier programs are in a better league. Your fans are more interested in the matchups, yada, yada. The list goes on. Now, I don't think you want to throw the whole $200 million, you know, no revenue, all that into that bucket, because the eventual payoff there is far less than it would be if you're in the Big 12. But no, man, I totally agree with you. I mean, football was an afterthought for so long, and now you're sort of paying the price for that. But I would also think, like, it doesn't feel to me, though, man, like, I don't know if you feel this as somebody who lived and breathed it. It doesn't feel like to me the success of the football program from the past 10 to 12 years is really getting the respect that it should now. When you talk about the bowl run that this program is on, the Cotton Bowl appearance, three consecutive successful coaching tenures, you know, a four quarterback run that I would dare any program in America, power conference or not, to try to match. When you go back through Paxton Lynch, Riley Ferguson, Brady White, Seth Hennigan, you know, I mean, that show me another country in a program in America that's matched that, right? And then you just think about, you mentioned the other day, some of the success against Big 12 programs. You have victories over Ole Miss, Mississippi State, you know, in the fairly recent past. I mean, you know, I'm not telling Memphis fans anything they don't know, but you really got to look at that football program and respect what it's accomplished and realize, too, that moving forward into the future, you know, the underpinnings of where you want to go are largely based on football getting to that power league. And, you know, the Big East is it. Like, if you're going to a power league that, you know, that is non-football, I mean, the Big East is your only option there. Yeah. And I just don't know that, you know, that you want to kick that football program to the curb, given all that it's done for you over the last 10, 12 years.
You're completely right about still a certain amount of indifference about the football program from the Memphis faithful. But, like, I have come to grips with this. 11 years of success does not solve 30 to 40 years of indifference. You know what I mean? Like, that's that's the problem. 11 years of success is still, in the grand scheme of an athletic department and a football program, a very short period of time. So you just have to keep stacking years on years on years, and then hopefully, eventually, people come around on a consistent basis. I will say, you know, that's something, yeah, that's that I hate to say it this way, David, and you probably know I feel this way, and my listeners probably know I feel this way. It's a bit offending, you know, to hear this every time there's a no, every time there's a lack of movement when on the realignment front, it always comes back to football should be nothing. And I just tell me that, tell Anthony Miller that, tell Riley Ferguson that, tell Paxton Lynch that, tell Justin Fuente that. Like that really is a very offensive thing to say to a lot of the people that have helped turn this thing around when it was nothing. You know what I mean? Like that. Well, I think we've had this conversation before, but it never fails to get under my skin for good reason.
Well, in a city that kind of prides itself on getting it out of the mud and kind of overcoming adversity and perception, I mean, that's exactly what the Memphis football program has done. I mean, I can't think of a sports team outside of the grit and grind years with the core four that has embodied the Memphis mentality more than Memphis football. I mean, there's never been a moment in time where they've been eaten off the silver platter. I mean, you're surrounded on all sides by SEC football programs, yet over the last 5, 7, 10 years, you've managed to be as successful or more successful than Arkansas, than Mississippi State, prior to Lane Kiffin, than Ole Miss. You managed to be better than Vanderbilt, which is in the SEC. And prior to Josh Heupel, you were operating at a higher level than the University of Tennessee. I mean, so it's, I don't know what else to say. I mean, that's incredibly impressive for a program that was once entirely neglected. And now you're seeing that investment, that at least at the institutional level anyway, that success is being rewarded with the investment that they're, you know, making at the Liberty Bowl, with the push that they're making to try to get this program into a power league. And then also with the infusion of cash that is going to the football program in terms of the roster and how competitive it is at the AAC level. I mean, Ryan has everything he needs. And I believe this too, man. You know, I almost feel like what's transpired with the Big 12 and the rejection that's come to light here over these last few days, it almost kind of puts more pressure on the coaches with football and with men's basketball at the University of Memphis, because now the whole world knows that, you know, they're really serious about being successful. And all this money they were going to spend on going to the Big 12, or that they had earmarked for that, you know, some of that at least is there to support these programs, even though they're not in the Big 12. And so you got all this money. You got all the you're going to be close to the $20.5 million revenue sharing mark next year. Boy, you better go out and perform in the AAC with that sort of backing if you're Ryan Silverfield, if you're Penny Hardaway. I think in some sense, it almost puts more pressure on them to go out and continue to be successful. And so, you know, I mean, that's an interesting little caveat here.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
I guarantee you, Gabe, there are coaches around the country who are going to look at Memphis and say, I could go there and dominate the American with $20.5 million in rev share. Yeah, sign me up for that. So that's another sort of unintentional byproduct of what's transpired here is I think you've made your jobs pretty attractive this week to that aspiring head coach or rising star in the coaching ranks who maybe isn't sure if they want to take the jump and go take a Group of Five job. Well, I don't think you're looking at Memphis like you would a normal Group of Five job. You're probably looking at it like a power conference job with an easier schedule. And that would be pretty attractive to a lot of candidates.
And it's been attractive before. I know multiple guys that I'm friends with in the coaching business who have other jobs that, you know, before they got those other jobs, Memphis was one that they wanted to look at if Ryan was going to flail around, but he hasn't. 10 wins and 11 wins, 21-5 the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. So that ship sailed, but you're 100% correct. I think that is a bit of a consequence for those coaches, knowing that this money is readily available. It's you got to turn the heat up. You got to get it going as good as possible. Now, Big Ten Media Day is going on right now. I have to ask you off the top, is Kurt Cignetti, who I'm supposed, like, I should be rooting for, like, Indiana's never had success football-wise, is he becoming just as annoying as possible? Is he one of the most annoying coaches in college football at this point?
You don't like Sig? I kind of like him.
Okay, all right. I mean, the arrogance is getting to be a little bit much, and he's winking, and he's doing all. I mean, he's a little too animated for me. And then Listen, you know I'm not an SEC strength of schedule apologist by any stretch of the imagination, but his shot at the SEC with his out-of-conference schedule after, you know, canceling the Virginia home-and-home, it's like, dude, you can't go after – going into last year, what, Indiana had the 102nd-ranked strength of schedule, and even by the end of the year, 11 teams in the SEC had harder strength of schedules than Indiana. So, like, I have never quite understood, like, the Big Ten trying to shoot at the SEC when it comes to the strength of schedule metric or how hard the schedules, you know, compare to be against each other, a Big Ten or an SEC schedule.
He's the wrong messenger for the
– For sure.
Our schedule is tougher than the SEC's schedule, and I do think he's a coward for dropping Virginia. Like, there's no doubt. Like, what are you doing? You're afraid to go play – Virginia of all teams. I can't forgive him for that, but I think he's a breath of fresh air to the coaching ranks, because he's just in that IDGAF sort of mentality. Like, I think you're seeing a refreshing sort of like new age of coaches who don't care anymore. I mean, in the SEC in particular, it's all so doctored and manicured and rehearsed,
sure,
and canned and whatever, but you actually get out to some of these other media days, ACC, like with Brent Key, you see it with Kurt Cignetti, and you actually like get them in these settings where they're not at the podium and it's a little more casual, and yeah, they're actually pretty good. I think Kurt Cignetti's a breath of fresh air in that way, because like he may kind of be full of BS, but like he's not afraid to say something a little bit controversial,
yeah,
and that's so refreshing when you come out of SEC media days where it's just literally just this mind-numbing coach speak drivel at all times.
Yeah, I get you. And I will say Big Ten media days has a lot more juice than what SEC media days was this year. But I also think spring meetings takes a little bit away, because you get a lot of the news and the information you need at SEC spring meetings before you even get to SEC media days. But I'll agree to disagree on Kurt Cignetti. I think the constant peacocking and the winking, it's just it's wearing thin on me already. I can't imagine where I'll be, you know, in a few years when he's just about tenured there.
Gabe, if you get Indiana to the college football playoff, you can say whatever you want to.
Sure.
Wink.
Sure.
What do you want to?
I guess. Again, agree to disagree. Agree to disagree. Now, Tony Petitti spoke up on the college football playoff, and this is the final thing I'll bring up with you. He said, to be clear, any college football playoff format that increases the discretion and role of the college football playoff selection committee will have a difficult time getting support from the Big Ten. I agree with that statement, but I also disagree with the idea of four automatic qualifiers and a potential 8-4 Big Ten team getting into the college football playoff. So I don't know how to feel. I think you know that I have chosen to feel indifference toward the new college football playoff format.
I want to leave it at 12. In fact, I'm kind of glad the SEC and the Big Ten are at odds here, because it increases the likelihood that we kind of keep this thing at 12. And I like 12 because it incentivizes regular season performance. You get your top four who get a bye, you get your next four who get a home game, and then you get your next four who just feel lucky to be there. And instead, if you increase it to 16, regardless of the format, then you no longer have byes, and it's just I think it de-incentivizes regular season performance to a degree that I do not want to see in college football. So I'm fine with this impasse. I love it. I think it's the best thing for college football, the fact that the Big Ten and the SEC don't agree on this, because I think it means we're going to get at least a couple more years with a 12-team format. And I think that's what it should be. I think it should be a 12-team format. And I love the fact that at least for now, you know, that's kind of looks like it's going to stay there.
Yep, for sure. Well, you the man, David. We'll talk again on Friday.
All right, man. Sounds good.
Yes, sir. He is David Cobb from CBS Sports, college football, college basketball writer for them. It's your last chance to get over to Robert Irwin Jewelers for the Summer of 1000 engagement sale. It is almost over. Save up to 40% off all diamond jewelry and engagement rings. With any purchase of $9.99 or more, get free diamond stud earrings. And with any purchase of $24.99 or more, get a free Yeti Tundra cooler. Again, $24.99 or more, you get a free Yeti Tundra cooler. And there's a lot of examples I could go through. But you get the picture there. What you get at Robert Irwin Jewelers is unlike any other, because they try to give you savings. They have multiple ways of paying and with all budgets in mind, but they have the meant to be guarantee that you always have to keep in mind. If you buy your diamond engagement ring from Robert Irwin Jewelers, you have 365 days to return it for a refund, no questions asked. If you guys break up, if she wants a new ring, you can handle that. They try to take the pressure and the risk out of going and buying and making that big decision at Robert Irwin Jewelers. You can propose now and pay later at Robert Irwin Jewelers. There's many financing options. You can take up to 60 months to pay. But this is your last chance. I'm telling you right now, last chance to save up to 40% off diamond jewelry during the Robert Irwin Jewelers Summer of 1,000 Engagement Sale. Hurry in. The sale will end soon. See a store for complete details. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers. Five locations are online at rijewelers.com. Now, we need to go ahead and do a little thing we call a trip around the NFL coming up next, because all 32 teams are now participating in training camp. Football is officially back. Stick around right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9. Connor, I got to be honest, I love hearing this music, because that means NFL football is back. All 32 teams have reported, including veterans, to training camp. So let's go ahead and get into it. The Miami Dolphins, gosh, they're an interesting team. They had a gap year last year. I guess we're going for another gap year this year. They traded away Jonnu Smith and Jalen Ramsey to the Steelers. They get Minkah Fitzpatrick, who they had their hands on originally before they traded him to the Steelers. But at the tight end position, because they traded away their starter from last year and Jonnu Smith, who caught for nearly 900 yards, they ended up signing Darren Waller, who's been out of football for the better part of 2 years and started his rap career. Well, Darren Waller is starting the season on the physically unable to perform list. So now Tua is going to have to target Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill as much as possible. Not that he doesn't anyway, but they don't have a tight end. They're backups. Pharaoh Brown, Julian Hill, and Tanner Connor. Who, and who? I mean, it's just a tough turn of events and predictable turn of events for the Miami Dolphins. Oh, gosh. This just has to do with Geno Smith, new quarterback in Las Vegas, and his pen. He is still unbelievable with the pen. Great rider. He still has his fastball. If you remember, way back in the day when he was with the Seahawks, wins a game, primetime game, does the final interview, the walk-off interview, and he said, "They tried to write me off, but I ain't right back, though." You remember that one? Great quote. He gave another one yesterday. He said, "I didn't come to Vegas to roll the dice. I came to run the table." Oh, the guy's pen still works. He still has his fastball. Shout out to Geno Smith. All right. Now, Cam Ward is going to be the starter for the Tennessee Titans. He's the number one overall pick out of Miami. We expect him to start. But there was some question before Will Levis got surgery and sat out for the year. As, you know, was he going to at least get a run at the beginning of the year? What was that going to look like? Well, Will Levis gets his surgery. He's going to be out for the season. Cam Ward, it's his room to run with. Cam Ward was actually asked about his reaction, though, today to Will Levis' season-ending injury. And what would you expect from a guy in that position? Obviously a weird question, but he could say, you know, "I wish him well. Hope he gets back healthy." Cam Ward said, "I didn't have a reaction. I'm focused on Cam Ward." That was the quote. He was asked, "How do you feel? What's your reaction to Will Levis' season-ending injury?" And the quote was, "I didn't have a reaction. I'm focused on Cam Ward."
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app, and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
I don't think he likes Will Levis. That's my assumption here. Could be wrong. I don't think he likes Will Levis. All right, now this is one of the best things that came out of the, you know, the first couple of days of training camp. Mike Vrabel, new head coach with the Patriots. Makes a whole lot of sense that he is that guy. He's a former Patriot, won Super Bowls with them, all that good jazz. But one of the best things about Mike Vrabel is how blunt he is at press conferences. He was asked a question about the secondary, and then that was followed up by another question from Ben Volen, a reporter that covers the Patriots, about the secondary again. And here's Mike Vrabel in response to that second question, that redundant question. Mid-season form already for Mike Vrabel. I know some people view like coaches that are a little bit ornery at press conferences as a bad thing. But when you deal with press conferences every day and you have to deal with stupidity like that, getting asked the same question twice in a row, I don't blame him for having the response he did. New York Giants have named, and this is from Brian Daboll today, Russell Wilson, the official starter. So no Jameis Winston, Jackson Dart. He's going to have a year to learn. I like this. This makes a whole lot of sense. I think that Russell Wilson can teach Jackson Dart a lot about how to be a professional in the National Football League for a year. And if by the end of the year that team stinks, you can get Jackson Dart some run. But he has to learn some lessons before he gets there. When he was picked by the Giants, whether he was going to get picked by the Steelers, Giants, whoever it was in that first round, I always said, I think you have to deal with some development with Jackson Dart. When he was at Ole Miss, it was a lot of RPO, very, very heavy in that regard. Sometimes, you know, they would just run vertical routes. It was very easy concepts to grasp. Lane Kiffin does a good job of trying to dumb down offenses for his quarterbacks. That's why I'm a big believer in Austin Simmons coming up this year, but that's beyond the point. I think Jackson Dart can be successful, but I knew he needed a year of rest. Now, I hope that Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, the GM, are still in place by the time Jackson Dart has a chance, because if you bring in a new GM and a new head coach, they don't have any tie to him. That could be a bad situation. We saw that with Josh Rosen with the Arizona Cardinals not too long ago. But I do like this move. I think Russell Wilson could surprise some folks as the quarterback of the Giants. I think Brian Daboll is a really good offensive mind. The problem is he had Daniel Jones. And Daniel Jones, there's only so much you can do for a guy like that. And even with that, Brian Daboll in year one with Daniel Jones got into the playoffs and won a playoff game. So I think he can do some good things with Russell Wilson. We're just going to have to see. Saints safety, the night before the first day of training camp, Tyrann Mathieu has called it a career. He retired. Here's what he had to say on social media on Instagram. As I hang up my cleats, I'm filled with gratitude as I close this chapter of my life and officially retire from the game that shaped me in every way. From my first snap in college to my final play in the NFL, this journey has been nothing short of a blessing. Football gave me purpose, discipline, memories that will stay with me forever, but more than anything, it gave me a community. He retires with 3 All-Pro appearances on the first team, 3 Pro Bowls, and a Super Bowl championship with the Kansas City Chiefs. I need to ask you this, Connor, just like without checking anything, Hall of Famer, no, not a Hall of Famer?
I would probably say Hall of Very Good.
Very good. He was phenomenal in his LSU days. I know they got cut short by the drama and everything. Unbelievable. I mean, playmaker of all playmakers at LSU in his day. Here's what Pro Football Ref has. Now, they do like a predictor for Hall of Fame, and the numbers are a little bit confusing, so I don't want to get too bogged down with that, but I will tell you the average Hall of Fame DB is a 97 according to this Hall of Fame metric. Tyrann Mathieu is a 65.2. Now, that doesn't preclude him from getting into the Hall of Fame because there's guys right around him. Roger Worley was a 70.75. He's a Hall of Famer. Mel Renfro, 69.75. He's a Hall of Famer. Donnie Schell, 68.88. He's a Hall of Famer. John Lynch is actually a 64.28 to Tyrann Mathieu, 65.2. He's a Hall of Famer. So I think it's going to be a couple of years. We may have to get to the Veterans Committee to ultimately get him in way down the road, but I think Tyrann Mathieu will ultimately make it. He had an unbelievable life in football, and he was a consummate professional as soon as he got into the NFL.
Still one of the best nicknames ever.
Honey Badger.
I hope he gets in.
I hope he does.
Rooting for him.
He was very, very good. All right, now that will do it for a trip around the NFL. We need to go ahead and get to small talk to wrap up hour number 2 coming up next right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Colin Cowherd today on the Herd, his daily radio show, has weaved a heck of a tale. Now, he says he has it on good authority that Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Cleveland Browns, is before the 2025 season looking forward to 2026. And what he had to say was that Jimmy Haslam wants Arch Manning to be his quarterback and Nick Saban to be his head coach. And Colin Cowherd says we need to keep an eye on. Now, I am not the smartest person in the world, but I do realize that the chances of this ultimately happening, after drafting 2 quarterbacks, by the way, in the 2025 NFL draft, that they feel pretty decent about in Shedeur Sanders and Dylan Gabriel, the chances of this happening seem very, very slim. If the Browns suck, Arch Manning would then have to be good enough to be a top 5 pick. Then the Browns would have to move off of Kevin Stefanski, who they have given multiple check marks to. Like, they seem to really like him. Then Saban would have to come out of retirement after Kevin Stefanski gets fired. Then you also have to take into consideration that Arch Manning and the Manning family would be okay with Arch ending up as a Cleveland Brown. I mean, let's not act like the Cleveland Brown quarterback history is good at all. It's the worst in the NFL. The Mannings already told Eli he couldn't go to San Diego with the Chargers, and Phillip Rivers ended up being okay with him. He went to the Giants. Eli did. So all those things would have to come together for this to even be close to a reality. And, Connor, if I was putting a line together and a parlay on all these things happening at the same time, what do you think that line would look like?
Oh, my God.
Massive. 500,000 to one, 1,000,000 to one?
My first thought was, why would Nick Saban want to get into business with the Cleveland Browns? Just a terrible franchise.
I believe he was on their staff at one point in his early career.
Yeah.
Way back. But I guess he made a good impression on Jimmy Haslam at that point. But we also have the history of him with the Dolphins. That was terrible. His one NFL try as a head coach was awful after he left LSU. But seriously, if you're putting together a line for all these things in succession to happen before the 2026 season, I mean, that would be...
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
The 5 million to 1. There's no way that what Colin Cowherd said is going to come to reality. It's just not even, like, how do guys get away with stuff like this? Can I ask that question? How do guys get away with segments like this on Sports Talk Radio? I know it's kind of greatest hits because you're bringing up Nick Saban's name and you're bringing up Arch Manning's name. But that is one of the most ridiculous, heinous acts of sourcing I have ever seen in my entire life. And I like Colin Cowherd more than the average radio listener. That's just insane, though. Absolutely insane. Hour number 3 will come your way next, and we will open it talking with Jason Munns about everything Tigers right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.